Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast, made on Varick Street, a stone's throw from some of New York's hottest nightclubs, including the one where Chris Brown and Drake got in a fight.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We wanted to start the new year off right with a rock and roll Hall of Famer, a guy whose career spans more than 50 years and a whole lot of soul, someone whose early fans included the Rolling Stones and whose more recent fans include filmmaker Quentin Tarantino. In fact, Tarantino's film Jackie Brown introduced a whole younger generation to the great American soul singer Bobby Womack. Across 110th Street, pimps trying to catch a woman that's weak. Across 110th Street, pushers won't let the junkie go free. Across 110th Street. Bobby Womack's Across 110th Street was originally written for a popular blaxploitation film of that name. Back in 1972, Womack's early band, The Valentinos, recorded a song that became a hit for the Rolling Stones. He worked with Sam Cooke, Aretha Franklin, and Wilson Pickett. This is a guy with stories to tell, and he's going to tell us some on Soundcheck today. Now, Grammy-winning producer Don Was, who has produced all of the Rolling Stones' records since Voodoo Lounge, and who is also now the president of Blue Note Records, is just one of many Bobby Womack fans in the music world.
Well, I'm a fan first, you know. I think when it came out, That's the Way I Feel About You, that was one of the most killer records I ever heard.
That's the way I feel about you. Ooh, that's the way I feel about you.
He's an incredibly powerful singer, first of all. You know, he's got so much charisma, so much personality, so soulful. He leaps out of the speakers at you. He's singing in Technicolor.
Put you through, put you through, put you through. Trust in me, my dear.
And then his style of playing is so unique. You know, he plays upside down. And he gets a groove going that people try to imitate, but you can't get it unless you play upside down, which...
Because he's playing a right-handed guitar.
He's left-handed, lefty. And he just turned a right-handed guitar upside down so that the high strings are on top.
Right.
And it just gets this whole... of it. If you listen to the Valentino's version of It's All Over, I Used to Love Her, But It's All Over Now. He's got this pocket going. That's crazy. I tried to cut a cover of it once, actually with Bette Midler. I was producing Bette Midler, and we wanted to do that song, and Bobby came in and played on it.
Wow.
And because no one can play that groove correctly other than him.
Though the Stones had a fair go at
Stones
it.
Stones did a real nice job.
Although it is still a Bobby Womack song.
That's no lie.
In fact, we cut Voodoo Lounge. He came to my house where we were recording on Mulholland Drive in California, and he sang backgrounds on that album. He's on a lot of Voodoo Lounge.
Bobby Womack singing backup vocals on the Rolling Stones album Voodoo Lounge, produced by Don Was. And you're working with him again, right?
Yeah, he just came in. I'm producing a Van Morrison record, and he sang a duet with Van in London. It was about a month ago. And he was amazing, man. Like, first take, just great, you know. And it's an old Van Morrison song called I Just Want Some Peace of Mind. And And he's incredible. He's got all his chops. He sounds beautiful, and the guitar tone is so distinctive. It's really cool. He's really one of the giants.
Deep river love, my home is over Jordan. I want to cross over into campground.
That's Deep River from Bobby Womack's most recent album, The Bravest Man in the Universe. And we heard Don Was, co-founder of the 80s band Was Not Was, producer of the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan, and others. And Don Was will be joining us on Monday to talk about Blue Note Records' 75th anniversary, since he's also the president of that storied jazz label these days. But for now, he's just another Bobby Womack fan. And so are we here at Soundcheck. The singer, songwriter, and fabulously left-handed guitarist Bobby Womack joins us now in the studio. Bobby, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure of mine to be here.
I have to ask you about the cover of your last record, The Bravest Man in the Universe. Is that your hand? It's the back of your hand, but your thumb is folded over the back of your hand at an impossible angle. And I see you just did it here.
Yeah.
Are you double jointed?
He was, well, I guess so. You know, if you've been in this business, you're supposed to be double jointed.
Now, has that affected how you play?
I think it affected me in a positive way. You know, I was born with that. You know, it's like I was born with my talent to be able to reach people. And I think that's a great blessing, you know, because to be able to talk to people, if it's only for a minute, to put them all on one page spiritually, you know, just it's nothing like it.
Yeah. Well, now, Don was just talking about you as a left-handed guitarist playing a right-handed guitar upside down. Yeah. So you came at music from a kind of an unusual angle from the get-go, it seems.
Yeah, just the fact that for some reason my father always says, never. A gentleman came in, my father cut hair on the weekends to make extra money. So he says, would you give me 4 or 5 haircuts and I'm going to give you this guitar. So my father loved the idea. So he told us, don't ever touch that guitar, because the guitar was the prettiest piece of furniture in our whole house. You know. And Where'd you grow up? Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
And so I went on, and naturally telling me not to do it, then I'm going to do it. You see what's behind it. And one day, I was practicing on the porch, knowing he's going to come walking around the corner. I run and put the guitar back. But this particular day, I broke a string. Oh, uh-oh. Man. And I knew my father would whoop me into the middle of the next week, you know, and I couldn't handle it. So I put it back in the case, like nothing was wrong with it, and closed it up. And the first thing he asked for when he walks in the door, pass me my guitar. I know he didn't have too much strength, because, see, we normally follow his movements. He's going to fall asleep. But this particular day, he wanted to see his guitar. He got the guitar, and he started playing the guitar. And he must have played for about 10 minutes before he noticed that the string was broken. So I was saying to myself, he can't even play. You know, he didn't know the string is broken. So when he asked, who's been playing my guitar? All my brothers pointed to me, Bob. And he told me to go outside and find the longest switch that I possibly could find. So, you know, I'm walking, looking for a switch, thinking to myself, ain't this something I'm going to pick up a switch so he can beat my ass with it, you know? So anyway, when he told me to play, he said, if you play good, I'll forget about everything. And that's when I became Jimi Hendrix and every other guitar player you want to name. And he told me, he says, you know, only thing's wrong, you got the guitar upside down. I didn't know that. And I had learned about four or five chords. And I said, but I'm not changing. This is what I play.
Wow.
And that's how I became the left-handed guitar.
Double-jointed thumbs, yeah. Guitar played upside down,
yeah.
And of course that voice, the voice yeah. of Bobby Womack, who's with me on soundcheck. Now, the record, The Bravest Man in the Universe, you did that with Richard Russell, who runs XL yeah, Records yeah. in the UK, and Damon Albarn.
And Damon Albarn,
from,
right.
from Blur and Gorillaz.
Yeah.
Where did it all begin?
Now, when you started working with them, you'd been away from the studio for a long time. How did it? Was it like swimming or riding a bike where you never forget?
Yeah, but I guess I forgot because I remember getting on the bike and falling off.
Is that true?
No, but I think Damon and Richard was so helpful towards me. And plus, I knew who they were after I had did a little looking around. And it made me want to be a part of something mm. that I had gotten away from. I never knew the business was so fast. It had changed so much. And they were asking me, why don't you try this? Why don't you try it just like that? That's it. And I said, it's only three instruments on there. And they said, yeah, but your voice is what I want mm. to get out. And that was important, so... You live and you learn.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always been used to teaching and learning from somebody and teaching and just, you know, trying to figure out somebody else. And became very different to have them telling me, and it was like me looking back in the past, you know. So it was very interesting. And that song, Bravest Man in the Universe, came from a song that I wrote many years ago for Isaac Hayes. He called me and said, can you give me a song? The Memphis Horns are recording. And you know, they play, man, everybody. He said, now they're cutting their own album. And that's wow. how that song came about. And when Damon and them heard it, they say, man, I think that's a great song. I think we should put it on an album cover.
When is that from? When did you write that originally?
I wrote that song 30 years ago.
Wow.
You know, so nothing is never old if it hasn't been told.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Put.
And that's very true. I start saying, boy, a song, if they never heard it, how can you judge it?
Well, if you have never heard Bobby Womack's song, The Bravest Man in the Universe, it's new to you, even though the record came out in 2012. Let's hear it.
The Bravest Man in the Universe. Is the one who has forgiven first.
The bravest man in the universe.
From Bobby Womack and the song The Bravest Man in the Universe, title track from his most recent record from 2012. And Bobby, that there's a little quote from Amazing Grace in the lyric there. You know, mm-hmm. Once was lost, now I'm found.
Yeah.
It's a 30-year-old song he wrote for Isaac Hayes and yeah. now kind of recreated yeah. here.
And Isaac Hayes took it to the Memphis Horns, mm-hmm. which was the group that recorded behind everybody, you know, and Willie Mitchell, who produced Al Green and a lot of other acts, but he was playing as a background singer. So it learned me that to be a good singer, you got to be a background singer to see what's going on. And once you figure that out, you move a front-round singer, you know.
Because you're listening, right?
Yeah, you're listening, and at the same time, you're learning.
Right.
Which is most important. I think timing is so important in the music. I mean, spiritually, you can sing too long or you don't sing long enough. So when you want to reach the people, follow your vibe.
So after 18 years of not making a record and then doing this album with Damon Albarn and Richard Russell, how was your timing? How was that?
My timing was rusty, but the easiest place to get unrust to me is in the studio. You don't have a crowd of people watching you. You don't have to worry about making mistakes. You can, you know, you can stop and start all over again. You can't do that on stage.
So how long did it take you to get the groove back?
I tell you what, it took me a day. It's because they were so positive, and I was kept saying, "You like that?" And they said, "We love it. We think that." And I think catching me in the raw, and so I speak, it made me just a better performer. I looked at life a lot different, and that was the one reason why it took me time to get off. Because, you know, this is a fast business, and it was too fast for me. I had to get off the roller coaster.
Yeah. And 18 years in the world of music is, that's an eternity. I mean, the various, like, genres and, you know, different trends that have come and gone in 18 years.
But many artists know that when you take that time off, you need that time off to get back to where you started from.
Yeah.
You know, and I can use any excuse and say it was drugs, whatever it was messing with me. You know, and I know artists and people understand, sometimes you got to stop and start all over again.
So when did you stop the drugs?
I've been straight about 22 years. You know, I don't even smoke cigarettes. I don't even drink.
But you did have some health problems, so that contributed to the...
Oh, yeah. I think that contributed to going on tour. Maybe it was coming down anyway, but I was going on tour with Gorilla. And that's how me and Damon hooked up. And first I was out about, hey, I need more time. I ain't got long enough. But I was so glad when that tour was over. I was tired. I was worn out. So I said, just think if they gave me 10 minutes. I said, man, I'm telling you, they would have been carrying me on the stage. Because you do it every night. And you we travel. We flew everywhere.
Just to get through the week, sometimes it's hard.
We're speaking with Bobby Womack, the singer, songwriter, and guitarist, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2009. And Don was mentioning that you're now working with Van Morrison.
Yeah, I always wanted to cut with Van because I thought, sitting and watching him in the audience, I said, boy, he's got the same size band. He come from the same school that I come from. And I said, plus, he's soulful.
Yeah.
That's when soulful for white people wasn't commercial.
So you even though he's from an ocean away, you recognized him as coming from the same school.
Yeah, and always wanted to do something with him.
And what song did you sing?
It was a new song that he wrote, and it was about coming off stage. I know that much. That's what attracted me to it. And he was talking about how I'm on stage, I'm at home, but when I come off, I ain't got nobody.
Yeah.
You know, I know that I'm alone. So whatever it is, if it bugs you enough, you got to try to find out what's the problem.
Well, now, you know, you've worked with, as you say, Gorillaz, and now with Van Morrison, but those are just two in a long, long list of great musicians that you've worked with over the years, you know, Wilson Pickett and Elvis Presley and Dusty Springfield and Ray Charles and of course, the great Sam Cooke.
Yeah.
Now, when Sam Cooke brought you to L.A. with your brothers, how was that news received in your family?
Well, it was great because my mother and father used to go listen at Sam when he was singing gospel. But Sam had changed over, and they were under the impression that he's going to give them some gospel songs, you know. And Sam had other thoughts in mind. He was saying, I think that the people should hear you. He said gospel at that time was real small. And he said, if you're going to deliver the message, you know, look what's happening to me. The first thing I thought about is, boy, I could do so much for my family. Hmm. My father don't have to work no more. You know, it wasn't that easy, man. The good things happen, but along with good things, negative things happen too. For me, I got lost in chasing that dollar.
Hmm.
You know, and the rabbit never stopped running.
How long did it take you before you realized you'd gone down that particular rabbit hole?
After everybody I did it for was gone, it was a long time, and I said, damn, I know. I said, Wilson Pickett was one of the first artists that gave me a serious break because he was very hard at the time. And once his company all said, oh, no, I think he sounds too much like Sam. I think he sounds too much like this and that. We walked out of the studio, and he said, Bobby, why don't you let me record those songs? And I said, well, that was a nice trick. You know, I was thought you wanted to do it anyway, and they helped you in this situation. But he was right. He said, every time they see my name, they're going to see your name right underneath. He said, then there's a lot of people want to work with you that don't want to work with you now, you know, because you haven't established yourself yet.
Right.
You know, and that's always the case, to see artists being turned down by major artists, by major companies, and going to another company that they're number one, everything they do. So I said, you have to have your own mind made up of what you're going to do and how bad you want to do it.
Mm.
One thing I knew I could sing. And so I don't care what nobody told me, I'm going to sing.
So you didn't want to just be a songwriter. You wanted to be out there in front of people, behind
the microphone.
Yeah, I
wanted to be out there in front, and then you learn what makes you tick, and you start to working on producing yourself. You know, which that's the last thing, because most people don't know about themselves like that.
Right.
You know.
So when you and your brothers went out to L.A., you recorded under the name The Valentinos.
Yeah.
And the Rolling Stones had a hit version with your song, It's All Over Now.
It's All Over Now,
but this is the original version by my guest Bobby Womack and the Valentinos. Bobby Womack there with his early band, The Valentinos, and his original version of It's All Over Now, which, of course, the Rolling Stones would then successfully cover. More with Bobby Womack when we continue on Soundcheck.
Soundcheck on the radio. Soundcheck on the internet. Soundcheck with John Schaefer. He's your host.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Bobby Womack, the singer, songwriter, and guitarist. During his career, he's collaborated with everyone from Janis Joplin, and Bobby, I want to ask you about her in a moment, to Wilson Pickett, with whom you co-wrote this song, I'm a Midnight Mover. But just a minute ago, Bobby, we were talking about your friendship with the late Sam Cooke, who helped guide your early band, The Valentinos. How long were you with Sam Cooke?
I was with Sam Cooke probably in 1960.
Okay.
And from there on, we started recording on his label.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started playing guitar with him regularly, all the time.
And you were just telling me that he called you at one point because he had written a song?
He had written a song. The song was Change Gonna Come. And he was looking for me to play on it. and he couldn't find me. I don't know where I was. I'm sorry I wasn't there. Anyway, he had purchased a home of Glenn Sound, who was one of the biggest sound guys around.
Did a lot of Hollywood stuff.
Yeah, he did Hollywood stuff. And so Sam kept saying, I don't know if I dreamed this song. He said, I want you to listen to it. And he had these speakers coming all out of the wall. The sound was incredible. And I never will forget, he played it, and he said, so what'd you think? And I said, it feels like death. He said, it feels like death. I say, I mean, it's going to attract the attention of the world to mm-hmm. listen to what's been said. And I say, and the truth never go out of style. Things do have to change.
Yeah.
So he was saying, Bobby, I won't live to see it, but he said, we're going to have a black president. So I say, what are you drinking? You know, what are you drinking? He said, no, I'm serious, Bobby. He said, times are going to change. They can't be the same way, because we were going in places and playing where whites was on one side, blacks was on the other. So you come along, you say, how could these things happen? And I say, crazy, it's really out of style, but a lot of places it's happening today.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
So Sam Cooke's Change Is Gonna Come was supposed to have you, Bobby Womack, on guitar. Mm-hmm. He couldn't find you, so you're not on this groundbreaking, you know, momentous moment in music. Do you have other musical regrets or regrets from that period?
I think the biggest regrets was going out to do something else and having a goal to reach, like buy my mother and father a nice house and that. And I lost one brother. Just a couple months ago, I lost another brother, Womack and Womack. You know, so I look at that and I say, nobody can live forever. But it was so much I wanted to say to them that I didn't get a chance to say, because while they was being met their destiny, I was somewhere else on the stage, you know, going through that. And, you know, I learned from that. I said, you can't be on stage all the time. When you come off, you got to feel like you have somebody.
Yeah.
You know, that you can confide in. Most times it's family, but sometimes family become fans.
Well, you know, it's funny how, you know, you're about to turn 70,
mm-hmm.
and it's not that old, and yet all of your peers, so many of them are gone.
Yeah, but I'll tell you the way it'd be gone. I said, maybe it's for my bones getting sore. I said, maybe I got to crutch and catch up with them. I don't know. And that thing, the Marvin Gaye's, the Otis Reddings, the Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, I worked with all these people, never knowing about fame. All they was doing was trying to pay their rent for the day
right. And
enjoy what they did. And I said, now all of those people are gone, and they're asking me. And in a sense, I feel like I represent them when I go on stage to say, this is what soul music is about.
Right.
Because everybody's got it, don't care what color you are. You know, you just got to recognize what your soul, that's like your style. What motivates you and make you move and make you want to get out there and do what you do?
Well, you know, it's interesting to hear you say that. You know, you are kind of, for many people, a representative of that period of music, of those people that you mentioned.
Yeah.
I want to play a Janis Joplin song, and then I want to ask you about this in a moment. The song is called Trust Me from Janis Joplin.
Trust in me, baby. Give me time. I heard somebody say, the older the grape, sweeter the wine. Just needs time to grow. It's going strong.
One and only Janis Joplin with the song Trust Me. Bobby Womack, who wrote that song?
I wrote that song, and I first recorded it on a group called the Pointer Sisters, where Janis called me. And I knew who Janis was, but I thought it was somebody playing a joke. She said, hey, this is Janis Joplin. She said, I want to cut one of your songs. So I said, yeah, this is James Brown. You know, I'm thinking she's still pulling my leg. And she said, no, I'm serious. You come over to the studio, I would like to, and bring a song. Mm-hmm. The first song I played was Trust Me. And she had already said, if I ring the bell, keep on singing. If I don't ring the bell, that's the song. So the first song, that was the song.
Yeah.
But I didn't hear it. I was still running out of songs trying to get it. I said, what is it with this woman? You know, she didn't want none of the songs, but she said, you remember I told you the first song? And that's the song we recorded. It was Trust Me.
So, but you had written it for the Pointer Sisters, or did you write it for yourself first?
I wrote it for myself first, and I always would write something for myself and put it in the closet, or I'd say, you know, my little bag. When somebody had a song, I said, we'll play a songs that I wrote that I never recorded.
Yeah.
And that's how they come about.
Now, is it true you were one of the last people to see Janis Joplin alive?
That's very, very true. And that's why I felt so bad hearing this song. I mean, it came back like it was just yesterday.
So what happened?
Well, I went to her room because we just had so much to talk about. And we were sitting there talking. And I seen she had a disappointment with somebody who was supposed to come. So I'm getting high like I normally do, and I say, hey, why don't you try this? And she said, I don't want to be up. That puts you up. I want to be down. So finally the phone ring, and she answered the phone. And they asked who was there. And she said, Bobby Womack. And the guy must have said, I'm not coming up unless you get rid of him. So I said to myself, I don't even know that guy. You know, anyway, she almost pleaded, please, Bobby, I know you won't understand this, but I got to see this guy. Got to see this guy. She said, he's not going to come if you don't leave. So I said, okay, I'll talk to you in the morning. And I got on the elevator. As I was going down the elevator, I could hear him running up the stairs, you know. And Paul Rothchild was producing her at the time, and he called me and said, Bobby, I understand you was the last person with Janis. And I said, yeah, man, we got a lot of talk about a lot of things we gonna do. He said, she's dead. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I was really hurt. I said, damn, she was fine. But I said, some guy came up. So he said, did you ever see him? I said, no, he didn't let me see him. He didn't want to see me. And to the day, I wonder who was that person? Mm-hmm. You know, so many changes been made. I said, maybe he's probably not even living, you know. But when I think of that, I think of so many people that's known today that wasn't known then. But they want to be discovered because otherwise they don't ever get heard.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned several times this idea of, you know, the kind of communicating the spirit. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, you come from a kind of a gospel background.
Yeah, I really believe that. I mean, it don't have to be a gospel song. Just tell the truth.
Right.
Because a lot of people have lied all their lives, you know, and they'll say, they feel they're alone. So when I talk to them and tell them, I'm putting my business in the street, you know, and you coming to hear your business told by me. Let's do it.
Well, so your nickname, The Preacher, You know, people call you the preacher, but you called yourself the poet on two of your records from the 1980s. Are the two just – are they two different sides of the same
coin?
Well,
the guy that owned record company at the time came up with the idea of the poet, and I didn't want to be called a poet at all because I said, man, you got Smokey Robinson, you got Stevie Wonder, you got all these poets. I said, they all think that I'm bragging. And he didn't see it like that. Mm. So, you know, things like that change you. And it changed some people to grow, and it changed some people to never get a chance to open up. Yeah. Because there's always somebody telling you what to do and how to do it.
So do you not look back fondly at those records just because of the title?
I look back fondly at what they were before other people butted in. And I said, it was just me singing this song. I said, now you got a guy making a title out of it. Now you got a guy doing this with it. You got a guy adding the backgrounds. And if you didn't play ball, you know, it might not be, you're better off not even being in it.
Yeah.
Because you'll never get close.
So do you sing any of those? I mean, like, Love Has Finally Come at Last, which you recorded with Patti LaBelle. Was that meant to be a duo?
That meant to be a duo. Mm-hmm. And I was just knocked out. One night we were playing Philadelphia, and Patti LaBelle started singing from the audience. And
she was in the audience and you're on stage.
Yeah, and she started answering me.
Wow.
And I thought she had a microphone. I said, man, who in the hell was that? You know, Patti could sing.
Yes.
You know, she could sing. And the people started going crazy. So I said, Patti, we got to record. We got to record. That was magic.
Love is finally coming at last, and I'm never gonna give it back. Ooh, no, 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 no.
Just like an old cliche, one that simply says you can't miss what you never had. But it's more than a thrilling sensation. All I had to be tripping out on the girl's body vibration. But I knew, oh yeah.
Love is finally coming
at last. All I'm thinking about.
Bobby Womack and Patti LaBelle. Love Has Finally Come at Last from the album The Poet 2, one of Bobby Womack's two best-selling records from the 1980s. His most recent album is 2012's The Bravest Man in the Universe. And later in the fall, the new song with Van Morrison. What else, Bobby, have you been up to since recording The Bravest Man in the Universe?
A couple of weeks ago, I cut a song with Rick Ross.
Hmm.
And he called and said, man, I would love to do something with you. And I was asking my son, who is Rick Ross? I said, man, I feel so dated. He said, Dad, that's one of the hottest rappers ever. He said, Dad, you should get on that.
How many of those producers are on this album? What sound was you going for?
You know, this album is I most definitely tapped into, you know, the Curtis Mayfield of soul.
Okay.
On this album. You know, I actually just got off the phone with Bobby Womack less than an hour ago.
Wow, Bobby Womack?
Yeah. You know, he's one of my favorites. That's one of my favorites.
Is he on the album?
We just spoke on it, so. Yeah. We got a little connecting to do, but it's feeling good, you know what I'm saying?
And met him, and he was saying, have you listening to my song? It's that embarrassing when you say, no, I haven't. You know, he say, it's like your tracks, my vocal on it, you know. So when he got in the studio, he said, I just want to hear you sing. And he was just a fan. He said, as soon as this record come out, everybody going to want you on their record. So, you know, I'm waiting on that day to come. It's supposed to come out January. It's new album.
All right. And did that experience, were you a fan of hip-hop before?
Some. I was turned off about things that people would say because they had the floor. And I said, you still got kids out there listening. You still got... I don't know if that's going to change anything.
Right.
But I just came up in an era when you just didn't say certain things to be heard, mm-hmm. you know. Right now you talk about sex and you talk about everything, but you don't cover it up. You just say it right in an opening. And I just feel that's not why you got that talent to do that with.
Yeah. But, you know, so much hip-hop is sample-based, mm-hmm. those guys were going back to great old soul records. They knew who you were. They knew who Sam Cooke. They knew Wilson Pickett.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a really great thing for...
Yeah, it has been a great thing. And I've seen... I thank God that I live long enough to change my view on certain things and say, it's like Rick says, I know I wouldn't put nothing on here you would be not proud of. Yeah, I wouldn't put you in that position.
Mm-hmm.
And he stuck to his word. And the same with Damon.
Damon Albarn, yeah.
Albarn, you know. And so I just felt that, well, I guess respect. If you live long enough, you become a legend, you know, because you'd never go away. Anyway, I'm having a great time. And tonight, it will be an opening show. And I'll be having a great time there. Especially when you relive songs that you say, I wrote that song 40 years ago. People are still falling in and out of love. People are having rich one day and broke the next. I said, nothing changes. It just keeps going around.
But we have that black president that Sam Cooke said was going to come eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing that hasn't changed, you and the sunglasses.
Yeah.
You're like, you know what? Legendary for your collection of sunglasses.
Yeah, I have a lot of sunglasses. And now I really need them sunglasses. You know, my vision started to go a little bad, you know, from having sugar. But didn't mess with my voice.
Okay. So is that a diabetes thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sugar diabetes. And it just learned you. I said, thank God I stopped 20-something years ago because I was living hard.
Right.
And I said, I never knew the results. And so sometimes you can straighten up almost too late. But what you know, you always stick to your guns and do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so if I'm not doing the right thing, it's people going to come along that can avoid that, should know about it. And should take it serious, and the drinking and all, living high on a, you know, you got your inside body, your organs. I can talk about that all night long, but
please don't.
Come and see what a guy acts like with sugar diabetes.
And on that note, Bobby Womack, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, singer, songwriter, and guitarist. Most recent album is called The Bravest Man in the Universe, but appearances with Rick Ross and Van Morrison coming up in this new year. Bobby, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much.
It's a lot of fun, too. My pleasure.
Thank you.
Listen to me now. Do the things that keeps a smile on the face. Say the thing that make you feel better every day. And you got to stay on your P's and Q's.
The Soundcheck podcast is supported by people just like you. Make a contribution or become a monthly sustainer. Just go to soundcheck.org and click on support. Thanks for listening. I'm John Schaefer.